Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to Michigan's premier progressive podcast as we officially reach autumn here this weekend. And I think many of us agree that Michigan autumns are the best time of year. The fall colors, the crisp afternoons, Halloween decorations, and no hurricanes or Ron DeSantis, Florida. You can have those. We don't want them. I'm Pat Johnston, reminding you not to lose your minds over a Detroit Lions loss. I mean, come on. They weren't going to just suddenly stop finding ways to lose or to experience bad luck with injuries and shoddy officiating. I mean, you're talking about 60 years of football futility. It's tough to just suddenly leave all that behind. It's our lovable Lions. It's what they do. I mean, they had to let you remember for at least a moment they are still the Lions. But be happy. They're at least entertaining, and they are fighting in every game. I mean, don't forget, there were many years when you swore your local high school fielded better teams than the Detroit Lions did. And if there's one thing I like about head coach Dan Campbell's style, win or lose, he takes the battle to the opposition. Speaking of fighting, the nonprofit organization known as Mothering Justice out of Detroit is fighting to strengthen the political voice and muscle of marginalized women here in the state and across the nation. Its founder, Danielle Atkinson, wrote a piece in Michigan Advance recently about how the organization is fighting for legislation guaranteeing paid family and medical leave for all workers. She'll be joining me here in a few to talk about the importance of passing these bills and how it will help all Michigan families. Now, Mothering Justice is advocating support for Democratic State Senator Erica Geis's bills, providing for paid family and medical leave. Governor Gretchen Whitmer announced her support for paid family medical leave in her What's Next speech last month. Now, passing these bills would help Michigan join 11 other states who offer similar safety nets to families. State Senator Geis's bill would essentially serve as a replacement for the Federal Family and Medical Leave Act, which was signed into law by President Bill Clinton, if you recall, back in 1993, or at least those of us who are old enough to remember to recall all that. Now, that act allows up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave for family and medical reasons for people working for companies with 50 or more employees. Now, Senator Geis's legislation would require employers to grant 15 weeks of paid leave for family and medical issues, and it would include both large and small businesses. It would do so by creating a paid leave insurance program, although the details of how that would be done are still waiting to be ironed out. For instance, in Minnesota, it passed its own paid family and medical leave bill and is paying for the program this way, according to the Associated Press, and I quote, "The program will operate similarly to unemployment insurance. It will be funded by a new 0.7% payroll tax on employers that will take effect in 2026. Employers can deduct half of their premiums from workers' wages. The law contains protections against retaliation for workers who take time off, and it also includes premium relief for smaller companies." Okay, so that's what's happening in Minnesota. Maybe we'll see something similar when all is said and done here in Michigan. Now, naturally, the right-wing Michigan Chamber of Commerce is against any kind of plan to help give relief to our workers. And it's really kind of a nutty stance to take, since paid family and medical leave would improve not only the health of their workers, but improve the morale of their workers as well. I mean, come on! This whole notion of working yourselves to death is for some reason beaten into our brains. And I don't know why I just hit my head really hard while doing that, but I did. But it leaves us to feel guilty for wanting to spend time caring for newborns, to spend time caring for our sick relatives, or to just spend some time caring for ourselves. I mean, it's really sick and twisted, and also an antiquated train of thought which has no basis in fact, logic, data, or science. Other countries have signed onto a form of paid medical and family leave. I read a Pew Research poll that said that some 76% have access to some form of paid sick leave here in this country, but that those numbers are geared more towards high-income earners. Of those ranking in the bottom 25 percentile when taking earnings into account, only about half receive some kind of paid sick leave, while for some people in the bottom 10% of income, just 30% of them have paid sick leave access. This is especially hurting Black, Brown, and all low-wage earners. They are the ones hit the hardest by a lack of paid family medical leave and also paid sick leave. Progressive talk show host Tom Hartman wrote about this on his blog, saying that the United States is the only country in the developed world not to offer paid family and medical leave or even paid sick leave. We are the only country, and that makes zero sense. So much for the USA being number one. Well, yeah, I guess we are, since we're the only country in the developed world not offering any kind of paid family medical leave or paid sick leave. So it's up to the states to do something about it, since there's a little movement on the federal level. It's not just a fairness issue, a humanitarian issue, but it's also a public health issue. In the age of COVID, which is still here, everyone, why in the world would people still want employees showing up sick where they could get their fellow employees sick? Why would you want to visit a place of business where people are ill and so that way you could get it and bring it back and give it to another family member? Maybe a family member who doesn't really have the health to really sustain getting COVID. I mean, that's why paid family and medical leave is essential. It not only allows workers to care for their children or older relatives, but it allows workers to care for themselves too. You know, for all the right wing's bluster and bravado about being pro-family, pro-life, or pro-baby, whatever, they certainly have a rotten way of backing up the slogans by opposing nearly every single policy helping families care for one another. For example, we saw last week how after a year of the child tax credit ending, child poverty doubled in that year. If you recall, Congress extended the child tax credit as part of the America Rescue Bill back in 2021 when Democrats were in full control of Congress. Now, this guaranteed $3,600 for families with kids under 6 and $3,000 for kids 6 to 17 years old. And the child tax credit did precisely what it was designed to do, cut child poverty. But then, in 2022, before Republicans took control of the House, Congress still had the chance to expand the tax credit, which cut child poverty in half to a historic low of 5.2%. However, in the Senate, not one Republican would join in the expansion of the tax credit. Ah, but there was also Democratic West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, who joined Republicans in blocking the extension, saying families would end up using that money for drugs. I mean, Manchin had no basis of fact for saying such a ludicrous statement, but that's what he went with to appease. You know, I'm not really sure who he appeased by opposing such a popular policy. Well, okay, maybe I do. He appeased the corporate wing, I suppose. But Joe Manchin, who doesn't even have to worry what it's like to pick and choose if you should pay for decent school clothes for your kids or buy school supplies, didn't really seem to care. He didn't. So we cannot be shocked when the U.S. Census Bureau released a disturbing report last week showing that the child poverty rate more than doubled from that 5% number up to 12.4%. Washington Post economics writer Heather Long tweeted this last week. She said, over 5 million U.S. kids fell back into poverty in 2022, due almost entirely to expiring pandemic aid, especially the enhanced child tax credit. Just remember, this was a choice. Yes, it was. It was a choice of Washington elites and right-wing ideologues who serve their corporate donor base. The child tax credit worked. The evidence is starkly clear that it worked, and it worked here in Michigan. Michigan Advance's Anna Liz Nichols wrote about the Michigan League for Public Policy's Kids Count report showing decreases in child poverty for kids and young adults aged 18 to 22. She wrote, compared to data from 2016, the report says the number of children living in poverty decreased by about 71,000 kids and the number of young adults living in poverty decreased by about 73,000 people. Those decreases were in large part thanks to the 2021 child tax credit included in the American Rescue Plan meant to support the U.S. economy through the COVID-19 pandemic, Public Policy President Monique Stanton said. So when right-wing Republicans are in office, they make sure to always be on management's side. They claim to be all for the workers, but everything about them is anti-worker. And I'll talk more about that in this week's Last Call. But they cannot claim to be pro-family when they celebrate sending more kids into poverty and sending more families into food insecurity. And you're also seeing why corporate media always gives them the platform. By electing Republicans, corporations get huge tax breaks and incentives at the expense of the working class. So if Washington is broken and refuses to get policies done that actually helps families and kids, then we will have to do it here on the state side. And that's why passing paid family medical leave here in Michigan is vital. It won't just help make the state more attractive for young people to want to raise a family here, but it'll help guarantee families can be there for their loved ones. Again, the United States is the only country in the developed world not offering paid family medical leave or paid sick leave. Progressives, though, are fighting to get it done here in Michigan. Now, the right-wing DeVos Republican Party is standing against it, calling paid family medical leave as a way to legalize summer breaks for adults. Summer breaks? Really? I mean, that's the toxic nutball mindset of the Michigan Republican Party. Caring for loved ones is a summer break for adults? I'm not exactly sure who they believe will die on that hill with them, but right-wing Republicans, along with the Christian Nationalist Chamber of Commerce, is going to try its best to keep punishing hard-working families. Progressive grassroots media group and friend of this podcast, Distill Social, recently talked with some Michiganders about paid family and medical leave, and if they believe it'll just be a way for working people to be lazy and to take long, idyllic summertime vacations. Listen up.
So in your case, did you have maternity leave?
I did get 3 months.
Would you equate that time off to a summer vacation for adults?
No. No. Hard work every day, harder than my job, probably. Yeah. No, it was the most horrific experience having to still go in while I'm literally bleeding and in pain physically, and my daughter, and I'm engorged because I have a baby at home that I'm breastfeeding, and I mean, it was absolutely horrible. It's something that I don't understand why we're the only country that doesn't offer it. And it makes me sick to my stomach, and I hope for a change someday.
If people that profess to be pro-family, to take such an anti-family stand is the height of hypocrisy.
In that last part, I think I already echoed a similar sentiment about the right-wing's fake pro-family mantra. And good job there, Gina Keller from Distill Social. Progressives are fighting for working families. They are fighting for those struggling to get by in day-to-day life by simply helping them out so they can afford basic needs while caring for loved ones. How this is controversial at all astonishes the mind of a normal-thinking, common-sense person. As we've heard, the federal government is not moving fast enough to provide basic needs and rights for marginalized people and low-wage earners. But that's all changing now, thanks to strong progressives in the state legislature, but also to strong progressive community leaders and activists like Danielle Atkinson from Mothering Justice. She's coming up here in just a moment. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com. And Rich, thank you so much for all of your hard work on the website. You are listening to LOL.
The Left of Lansing podcast. If you truly want to get Pat fired up, talk about Tigers baseball or how you think the 90s produced the worst music of any decade. You've been warned. Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com and follow him on Twitter at leftoflansing. Here's Pat.
And like Jessica just said, there are a few ways that you can contact me if you have any comments or questions related to this episode of this podcast. If you'd like to have a longer discussion on something that I brought up here, or if you would like to give me a heads up on events or issues happening across our state, email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. I'm also present on Twitter or X, and you can also find me both on Facebook and Instagram as well. As always, I appreciate all the feedback, especially negative feedback, because I really like to talk to those of you who disagree with me too. All right. Well, I talked a bit about the importance of paid family leave here today and why Democrats must pass it this year in Michigan. Danielle Atkinson, National Executive Director and founder of Mothering Justice, recently wrote a column in Michigan Advance on this topic called It's Time for Paid Family Leave to Be a Priority in Michigan. She's joining me here this week to talk more about why passing paid family leave is of mass importance to our state and to talk about some other pressing issues as well. Danielle, thank you so very much for being on Left of Lansing this week.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Pat.
Well, let's first talk about Mothering Justice and what it ultimately is aiming to achieve.
Yeah, so Mothering Justice came about 12 years ago after just having conversations with mothers, especially moms who work in movement work, around what we needed to do to prioritize the issues that we're facing every day, issues that are marginalized to be women's issues and not firmly cemented in under the guise or under the label of economic justice issues. And both family medical leave and paid sick days, huge issue, childcare, wages, and the social safety net were all things that we kept hearing again and again, and obviously we're dealing with ourselves as well. So that was the birth of Mothering Justice, and since then, you know, we've had quite a few victories. We've won on paid sick days, protections for breastfeeding moms, licensure for midwives, and we've helped raise the minimum wage, and now we are working hard to get paid family medical leave passed.
Since you are the founding member, I mean, did you envision that you would be able to build this national organization that just continues to grow?
I don't know if I thought that it would get as big as it is, our impact would be as big, but I knew that there was a need. I knew that these were issues that I was facing every day, you know, going out, being an organizer, and then coming home to the same issues like, oh, my kid's sick. I don't have enough money to take time off. You know, I can't afford childcare, even though my husband and I are making good money. Things just didn't make sense. And I realized that it was time to put my effort into things that I was dealing with at home. And grateful for the response and how people have wanted to join. But I think that's just a reflection of the need for us to really center these issues in the conversation.
If you don't mind me asking, were you always engaged and involved in what was happening around the community? Or is it something that happened just recently?
No, it's always been, I say that I've only had two jobs in my life, an organizer, and I worked for Disney when I was in high school. My parents moved to this country. You know, they were immigrants, and I'm the first person born in the United States. And they always instilled in me that, you know, our society, our community is only good as much as we put into it and work for. My mother registered people to vote before she was eligible to vote herself. So it's a family value, and it's been my work for as long as I've had a job.
Have you been in Michigan your whole life?
I came to Michigan about 16 years ago.
Okay.
I met my husband on a minimum wage campaign in Florida, my home state, and he convinced me to move to this place that is not always very warm. and obviously fell in love with it. And I'm a Michigander by choice.
Cool. Cool. Well, and considering the politics of Florida now, I think it's better that you're in Michigan.
Exactly. Exactly.
Danielle Atkinson from Mothering Justice is on the show here this week. All right. Well, then let's get into your Michigan Advance column, which was titled again, It's Time for Paid Family Leave to Be a Priority in Michigan. Now, Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer said in her What's Next speech last month that she wants the legislature to pass paid family and medical leave, saying,
so many of us have points in our lives when we have a baby or an aging parent or a sick spouse, sometimes two of those things at once. But not all of us have access to paid family and medical leave, and we deserve better. No one should have to choose between being there for their family and a paycheck. Paid family and medical leave is a pro-family, pro-small business policy that will grow our state and its economy. So let's get this done too.
Now, paid family and medical leave is a major plank for Mothering Justice, I know, as you just brought up. And I know your organization is highly supportive of Democratic Senator Erica Geis's bill expanding paid family leave to 15 weeks a year for childbirth, caring for a sick family member, or caring for just themselves. And you wrote in your column, and I like this line, that paid family leave in Michigan is not an outrageous ask. So I would just like you to kind of explain, because I agree with you, but I'd just like to hear your words on why you say paid family leave is not outrageous.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in one sentence, everyone gets sick, but unfortunately, not everybody has time to get well. As people, we are built to care for ourselves and the people that depend on us. And it's ridiculous that we are even having this conversation, but if we're going to have it, let's talk about what it means to be in community, what it means to be human. That means getting sick. That means being with people, holding their hands as they pass away. It means being in dangerous situations when you need legal ramifications, which require you to go to court. These are all just elements of the human condition. And unfortunately, our workplace policies were not designed to consider that. And then also, when you really look at it, our workplace, I think President Obama said this in one of his State of the Unions, that we live in a modern family world with Mad Men policies, meaning that the policies that govern our workplaces were designed for one white, cisgender, heterosexual man to work, him to have a wife at home, and to have unpaid labor taking care of their children. That's what we're working with. And that's the premise that we are just meant to try to live our lives around. You know, as we're having this conversation, my daughter is homesick. Luckily, I can sit here and I can work with you. But if I were had to go into work and I had to rely on that paycheck to make ends meet, and that's where we are in a society because no one has savings, then I would have to choose between sending my daughter to school sick, leaving her home by herself, or just trying to figure out how I pay the bills with one less day of work. That's just untenable and unworkable. And so, and obviously not sustainable. So we have to figure out a way that we can invest in our people for things that always happen. And paid leave, both family medical leave, which we talk about in the context of a child being born, or a cancer diagnosis, or that inevitable situation where a loved one passes away, or paid sick days, which is what I'm taking advantage of right now when somebody's homesick, someone breaks a leg, or you need to make a doctor's appointment.
You brought up some great points there. I read where the Center for American Progress reported that just one in four Americans working in the private sector have any kind of access to paid family leave. And it's noteworthy that Black, Brown, low-income earners are the ones that are hit the most by a lack of paid family leave. And like you just said, I like the phrase that you just used, that this is just not sustainable. And I'm not trying to take the human element of this when I say this, Danielle, but to me, it sounds like it's just bad business sense as well, or at least I think it does.
Exactly. Especially in a situation and a time when people are really looking for good workers and they know what it means when someone who has been trained, who has given time to their organization or business leaves and the expense that that means for them, or the lack of productivity because someone is sick or thinking about a loved one at home or coming to work sick and not able to actually do their job. It only makes good sense to have a policy that's universal so that smaller businesses aren't competing with larger businesses on what leave policy. There's a floor that just allows people to take care of themselves and not have to worry about the financial difficulty of missing a day's pay, and then come back to a job that they can see values them.
You mentioned about your daughter not feeling well here, and sometimes many parents are left with the decision of just having to send their sick kid to school. But not just that, maybe the parents themselves are sick. And I mentioned how State Senator Geis's bill would allow people to care, not just for a sick child or a sick family member, but it would allow them to just care for themselves while being sick. And I sort of also look at this, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I look at this as also a public health issue. Is that
how? Definitely. 100%. Yeah. 100% a public health issue, because people are going to go to work sick. I went to the gym the other day and the person at the counter was wearing a mask. And I was just, I'm sure she has a COVID diagnosis. I'm sure she's coming into work sick because she can't afford to miss the day. Obviously, I don't know that, but we know, we all have people in our lives that are like, I'll just suck it up and I'll go to work. And unfortunately, our society kind of rewards that behavior and says like, oh, bootstraps mentality.
Yes.
But it's not good, especially coming out of a global pandemic. So we have to think about it. We have to think about our public health. We have to think about the cost to the most vulnerable people in our society when we are financially rewarding people coming to work sick. And then also when you think about someone getting a cancer diagnosis. So many people involved in this fight over the years have had their children diagnosed with cancer, have children with long-term illnesses. Our board chair, her son had sickle cell and passed away. Being able to hold someone's hand during their most vulnerable time in their life when they're sick, and not only do they need someone who loves them, they need an advocate by their side. We can't leave that to the market to determine whether or not you can do that. It shouldn't be the case that if you won the boss lottery, you can hold your child's hand as they receive chemotherapy.
And considering too that so that other countries in the industrialized world have practiced one form or another of paid family and sick leave and have had great results.
Yep, exactly. They're laughing at us, right? And when we're talking about productivity and we're talking about all of these things, people are what drive an economy. And if you're not investing in people, you're not investing in the economy.
You brought this up just a second ago about the bootstraps mentality that we have in this country. And do you think that is why some, even those who are fellow working class members who are against this idea, do you think it's because there was this socialized belief that was sort of, it's ingrained, maybe I'll put it this way, it's more ingrained in our society. Hey, you just got to go out there and you just got to tough it out and you've got to work no matter what.
Yeah, that's one of the several backwards ideas that have led us to this very moment. I was just talking to my husband yesterday, and he was just talking to me. It's funny. He was talking to me like I haven't been working on this issue for a really long time. But he was like, you know what? I really think the fact that men don't have paternity leave or paid leave to the same extent is because women are do the brunt of the caregiving. I was like, yes, that is right. That is why. And policy reinforces behavior and behavior reinforces policy. So even if a father or just a co-parent wants to stay home to bond with their child, you know, there's a little side eye there. Like, is that justifiable to bond with your child? And that's a real conversation we unfortunately are having in this country. And to answer it, yes, it is a legitimate it is legitimate for so many reasons. You know, when we talk about the success of children, but also the mental health of the parents and the caregivers. So we need to be really examining the ideas and beliefs that have led us to this moment and really ask ourselves, do we still hold those beliefs? Are they serving us?
Are you surprised by what kind of opposition you'll be getting from this bill? Like I was reading in the Detroit News. Here, let me bring it up real quick. Here we go. Michigan Chamber of Commerce Vice President Wendy Block, and she said that a new paid family leave bill would result in higher taxes, bloated government bureaucracy, and hurt the very people it is intending to help, especially small businesses and Michigan's living paycheck to paycheck. Can I just get your response to that kind of criticism?
Yeah, it's the same myopic view that the business community has on a lot of issues that are not in line with our values as a country. The Chamber of Commerce doesn't believe there should be a minimum wage. We know what happens when you don't have a minimum wage. We know what happens when you don't have leave policy. They are fundamentally against anything that would require businesses to do any more. And we just know that that's such a backwards way of thinking about how we grow our economy, how we push our country forward. We have to work together. They would come out against any leave policy. I don't even know if they read the bill before they said that they were against it. And saying that you're against people taking time off or having the right to take time off just makes it very clear who you represent and who you don't.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but there was it 2018, we would have had the chance as voters to vote for a paid family leave, but Republicans who were in control of the legislature at that time, they were able to block us from having a chance to vote on it.
Yeah, exactly. So that was, it was also called paid family medical leave, but it's paid sick days for those short-term illnesses. Exactly. So they knew, the opposition knew what the support would be for paid sick days on the ballot. They feared it passing and they feared the turnout that it would create when people had the access to direct democracy on an issue that was so important to their lives. And so they did something unprecedented. Instead of either adopting the initiative or putting it on the ballot, they undermined the initiative by passing it and gutting it. Fortunately, we've been in the courts for several years and the Supreme Court has agreed to hear the case. And we call it adopt and amend is what the Republicans did. And so they are going to rule on the constitutionality of adopt and amend. We're really hoping that they agree with us. That's not a way to uplift democracy. It wasn't in the spirit of the law and it wasn't in good faith of democracy. And they'll rule in our favor and we'll have a paid sick days law that allows us to stay home when we're sick.
And let's face it, they blocked it because they knew how easily it was going to pass. They did.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think that's what frustrates some people when it comes to politics, too, is that it's there. The solutions are there. But sometimes a minority can be there to stop it. What are your feelings? Do you think that something's going to get done here? You just brought up the courts, but do you think something else will get done here this year?
Well, I'm really hoping that paid sick days, we win in court and we'll have paid sick days. And I'm really hoping that we pass paid family medical leave, you know, with the Democrats in the majority and this being an issue that not only the governor champions, but has been a staple of the platform of the Democratic Party, that our representatives will get it together and they will pass this into law. And it will be a great day for Michigan people, for Michigan families. And we can finally show the country what it means to really invest in our people.
Danielle Atkinson of Mothering Justice is on the podcast here this week. Just have a couple more moments here. While I have you on, Danielle, I'm sure that you saw all the stories last week about how the child poverty rate has more than doubled in the past year from 5 to just 12%. This happened because congressional Republicans, along with a couple of Senate Democrats in Washington, refused to expand the child tax credit of 2021, which provided parents with a monthly check of $300, I think. Yeah, $300. Yeah. It produced, and you know, what this did was it just produced solid data showing that parents were able to buy basic necessities for their kids. And it also really helped decrease food insecurity for millions of struggling families. It worked exactly the way it was supposed to work. And it has to frustrate you like it does me that while the child tax credit obviously worked for millions of families, many Republicans fought to axe it regardless of what the data was showing. And of course, there was West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin, the senator, who refused to expand it because, and this is what he said, is that he believed parents, or at least some parents, were using that money for drugs. It astounds me that such insulated people like that can wistfully hurt millions of people like that. And I was just wondering if I could get your take on that.
Yeah, it's really, really sad. And Joe Manchin, first of all, can we really talk about Joe Manchin and how he really does not trust parents. He also was against paid leave in Build Back Better because he said that he believed that people would use it to take vacations. And I don't know about Joe Manchin's family, but when I was 9 months pregnant and about to give birth, going on a trip was not exactly what I was thinking about doing. And I also don't think learning how to nurse a baby and changing diapers and trying not to lose your mind is also an idea of a good time and a vacation. So I think he's out of touch and he doesn't trust parents. And that's really concerning for someone who's representing so many people and with such a high poverty rate in his state, really should be thinking about more about children having food in their mouth than people with addiction issues. It is very sad because, like you said, it was a policy that did exactly what it said it would do. And over the past few months, I've talked to people about how they've used those dollars. And one mom talked about long overdue repairs to her car. And so not only was it something that she had been putting off because she hadn't had the money, but it's the safety of her child having a working vehicle that transports her children and also brings her to work. We say we're about work. We say we're about supporting people that are working hard. But when we do that, when we see a policy that's enabling people to do that, and that it could so easily not be reinstated, it's really sad. But fortunately, we have the mechanism to change policy, to change hearts and minds, and to change the people that represent us by being civically engaged, by talking about our stories. We have to continue to do that, and we can't get disillusioned and take ourselves out of the process because that's truly when they win. And when I say they, I mean people who are opposed to the will of the people and people who are working every day, whether at work or in home, to build and sustain community.
I think, too, another thing that I always bring up is that while stuff like that happens in Washington, and it's a lot harder at times to not only pass things in Washington that will help people, but to keep those things going, maybe it's best to concentrate on what's happening in the states and to pass certain bills that will actually help people in the states. Right? That's not, I mean, it's always great when you can get something nationally done, of course, but at least here, like what's happening with Michigan with paid family leave and fighting for it, at least that kind of change can happen. It can happen faster than what can happen in Washington.
Exactly. I remember, so like I said, my parents are immigrants, and talking to my dad a long time ago about what I did as an organizer. And I was explaining it to him that organizers are the drumbeats that keep the attention on issues, that when there is a particular moment and government aligns, we can get something done by mobilizing the base and stepping into that moment. States are the innovation, right? This is where we practice and prove that these policies work. And then hopefully we can get them passed on a federal level for so states that don't have governments that will pass these policies can also get the benefit. And that's what we saw with minimum wage. We had to pass minimum wage in several states before there was the alignment on a federal level to pass it. But yeah, we've got to be working on a statewide, citywide level around all of these things and really prove the case for why these policies are what we need.
Time has flown by, and I have so many other things I'd like to talk to you about, especially when it comes like to that so-called parental rights movement. Is it okay if I can invite you back on some other time to talk more about that?
That'd be great.
This was a great conversation. Thank you so much for being on. If people would like to join in your efforts at Mothering Justice, what should they do?
Oh, we would love that. So just go to motheringjustice.org. We have a series of fellowships. We call them Learn Do Fellowships, where you can learn about organizing, but then also take part in all of the issues that we are working on.
All right, Danielle Atkinson, National Executive Director and Founder of Mothering Justice. Thanks so much for spending time here on Left of Lansing. I'll be sure to provide a link to your column and, of course, a link to Mothering Justice along with this podcast for those who are interested in helping make a better America with you. So thank you very much for being on.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's progressivism with passion. It's the Left of Lansing podcast, where Pat shines a light on Michigan's progressive movement. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com.
You know, Danielle Atkinson from Mothering Justice is just the kind of progressive leader and voice that we need here in our state and for the entire country. What an impressive individual, and I cannot wait to have her on here again soon. And again, I'll leave links to Danielle's Michigan Advance column and how you can learn more about Mothering Justice. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call.
Well, I'll tell you, in South Carolina as governor, I mean, we were building planes with Boeing. We were building more BMWs than any place in the world. I recruited Mercedes-Benz. I recruited Volvo. We had five international tire companies. But I was a union buster. I didn't want to bring in companies that were unionized simply because I didn't want to have that change the environment in our state. We very much watched out for workers. But the way we watched out for workers was we didn't encourage middlemen between companies and their workers. We encouraged the workers to have that direct communication with them. And so I would always tell our CEOs, it's really important that you let the workers be a part of the solutions with your company. It's really important that if you're going to have them work on a Sunday, you give them notice and let them do that. It's really important that you have family days so that families can see what their loved ones are doing. It's that communication between management and the workers that I think is so important. You put middlemen like a union in there where they are just making money off the workers. I think it's a lose-lose situation. It's a lose for the companies. It's a lose for the workers. And that's why I think it's wrong to embolden the unions. Instead, you should embolden the workers and the communication of their of them having with management.
Well, that was former UN ambassador and former South Carolina governor and anti-worker MAGA Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley proudly telling Fox Business News how she's nothing but a pawn for the corporate donor class. Haley was responding to how President Joe Biden's pro-union stance is somehow a negative aspect of his administration. Now, Biden, like many Democrats, has announced his support for the UAW strike against the big three Detroit automakers. However, Biden isn't exactly getting involved in the whole fray. And you know what? He probably shouldn't. He probably should stay out of the fray and allow the UAW and the big three to figure this whole thing out, which how it should be. Don't forget that South Carolina is a right to work for less state. And you heard Nikki Haley talk about how getting unions out of the way allows for, and this is how she said it, more direct contact between workers and their CEOs. No, I mean, she said that with a straight face. And anyone who believes that probably believes that also working for the Trump regime was a great political move. Right, Nikki? But the best part of her answer is how Haley said she'd personally talk to corporate CEOs on giving workers in her state time off. But at the same time, she said her right to work for less state allowed for direct worker to CEO communication. I'm confused. I mean, Nikki, you just said in one sentence how you personally had to get involved to encourage companies to grant some time off for their employees. But then in the very next sentence, you lauded your state for allowing workers themselves to convince businesses to give them more time off or for higher wages without union assistance. I'm confused, Nikki. Which is it? Did you help? Or did you get out of the way and just allow the workers to talk to the CEOs? Uh-huh. You see, if workers are directly talking with their CEOs and everything was going swimmingly, then why did you have to, quote-unquote, encourage CEOs to give their workers a Sunday afternoon off? I mean, Nikki, if workers don't need unions, then why did you feel the need as a government official to step in and speak for workers who needed simply time off? You see, the evidence shows that right to work for less has been an abject failure for South Carolina workers. A recent Georgia Tech study concluded that the anti-worker law had led to a decrease in wages for workers during those years. And CNBC, which I wouldn't exactly say is some kind of progressive lefty publication, posted a list of the top 10 worst states to work and live, and it listed South Carolina as the fourth worst state to work and live. And here I will read for you what that CNBC study said. And I quote, South Carolina is an unhealthy state, both at home and on the job. The state has the nation's fifth highest rate of occupational deaths, and it finishes in the top 10 for frequent physical and mental distress overall. Legal protections for workers are limited, and the state's violent crime rate also finishes in the top 10. Huh. Legal protections for workers are limited, according to that study. And worker wages have dropped through the years as well in South Carolina. But even more, who got hurt the most by Nikki Haley's and her fellow MAGA Republicans' war against workers? Women. In 2021, Business.org ranks the Palmetto State 40th with a wage gap of 23%, an average salary for women of $37,584 compared to $48,541 for men. This means that women essentially stopped getting paid on October the 8th. The national average gap is 18%. That's according to Greenville News. And by the way, Michigan didn't rank much better in 2021, coming in at 37th. However, that's after 40 years of Republican rule here in the state, as Democrats finally gained control of the state trifecta of government in 2022. Not only did they get rid of the right-wing, union-gutting, right-to-work-for-less law in Michigan, but they are trying to create a more level playing field for women by introducing bills like paid family medical leave. The Economic Policy Institute posted a bunch of studies back in 2021 detailing what happens in states with strong union representation. According to the EPI's research, unions raise wages for not just their members, but also for non-union members in those states. Unions bring in livable wages to low-wage jobs, and unions help raise women's pay. So, you can see why a radical, patriarchal, Christian nationalist and MAGA Republican Party wants to get rid of unions altogether. But don't take my word for it. Here, South Carolina Republican Senator and also a MAGA presidential candidate, Tim Scott, explaining his disdain for workers. Listen.
Ronald Reagan gave us a great example when federal employees decided they were going to strike. Either you strike, you're fired. Simple concept to me. To the extent that we could use that once again, absolutely.
Huh, so there's Tim Scott praising the time when Ronald Reagan fired the air traffic controllers for using their right to strike and collectively bargain. Republicans not only want to find ways to suppress workers and marginalized people with their crazy brand of authoritarian Christian nationalism, but they know they will still get the backing of their corporate overlords as long as they fight against unions, as long as they fight against working people. Trump is expected to travel here to Michigan to speak to some UAW members next week in an effort to show that He's really one of them. I mean, this is happening after it's being reported how Trump wants to enact even more disastrous corporate tax cuts if he somehow wins and isn't in jail in 2024. Now, UAW President Sean Fain has already denounced Trump's visit, saying in a statement, "We can't keep electing billionaires and millionaires that don't have any understanding what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck and struggle to get by and expecting them to solve the problems of the working class." Hear, hear. And according to Michigan Advance, United Association of Union Plumbers and Pipefitters General President Mark McManus said the following, and I quote, "When Donald Trump was first elected president, he invited me into the White House during the first days of his administration and promised that he would pass the largest infrastructure bill in generations. He claimed to be a builder just like us. But after 4 years, one thing was clear. When it comes to the bread and butter issues our members cared about, fair wages, safe job sites, and the ability to retire with dignity we earned, Donald Trump is just another fraud." Again, Trump and his fellow MAGA Republicans can claim all they want that they are for the workers, but you know better.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for another installment of Left of Lansing. Next week, I'll talk with Michigan Advance reporter John King on the right-wing parental rights movement to ban American history, and also about his time in the right-wing radio world, something I may have in common with him. Please email me at leftoflansing@gmail.com, and don't forget to visit the blog leftoflansing.com. I think I'm going to start putting up some weekly polls up there too, and then report on those voting numbers right here on the podcast. And I'm going to be posting a lot about paid family and medical leave, as we have to push Lansing Democrats to get that done. It's progressive activists like Danielle Atkinson from Mothering Justice who are helping lead the way, and we can help out by adding to the numbers of support. That's how we win, and that's how we will continue to make Michigan the best she can be. Enjoy the first weekend of fall, and remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.